Greetings. Welcome to In Conversation with Trevor, brought to you by Heart and Soul Broadcasting Services. I go beyond the headlines and beyond the sensational. Today I'm in conversation with Edna Dambudzo-Masiwa, the Executive Director of the Women's Action Group. If you enjoy this conversation, remember to subscribe, to like, and to share. Let's get down to some work.
It's difficult for someone to then prove that this person willfully infected me with HIV. We have had young girls getting into prostitution, into sex work, and they have sex for a dollar. We as Zimbabweans, we choose to be Christian where it suits us.
Edna Dambudzo-Masiwa, welcome to In Conversation with Trevor.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
You have been with the Women's Action Group for 33 years, and you've been executive director for 20 years. What has kept you so long in this space? It's not an easy space to work in. Women's rights, girls' rights. What has kept you in this space for such a long time?
For me, I think it's us, the older generation. We tend to be loyal and stay and really see to it that we achieve that which the organization is set to achieve. So I've stayed in at the Women's Action Group to do the work, to promote women's rights, to defend women's rights wherever possible. So for me, I was chasing a goal. I was fulfilling a purpose. So when I look back, I can't really believe that I've been with the Women's Action Group for 33
Shall
years.
Shall we do that? You were chasing a goal. You were trying to help women and girls. Mm-hmm. If you were to do a scorecard of relating to the issues that you've been working with, where did the organization succeed? Where did the organization fail? By that, I mean, what are still the outstanding issues? What have been the success areas?
I think for me, the success areas is the realization that there are rights for women. The realization that women's rights are human rights. I'm sure everyone understands that now. And Zimbabwe, when they stand in any platform, the leaders speak to how they've put in place policies that protect women and girls. So it really shows that we really have moved. We really have moved as women's rights organizations. And I want also to say it's Women's Action Group, which was the first organization to really question the status quo, the issue of rights, the issue of where women stand, because it was back there in 1983. When women came together after women were rounded up and accused as going out there for prostitution, soliciting for prostitution. Women who were found to be walking alone after 6 p.m. were arrested. And that's how Women's Action Group came about as a pressure group to really question the status of women. The argument was we have been to war together, we fought side by side, but now we have independence. We find there is preferential treatment for males as compared to females. So this is where the history of work started. So that's when women came together to really question the status quo. And here we are today. Women are also at the center. We also have positive policies that protect women, that promote women. So I feel we have gone a long way where it comes to women's rights in Zimbabwe. Coming to your other question where you say maybe where have we failed? For us, we see there are so many policies, but the implementation of the policies is not so good. For example, I will highlight the Domestic Violence Act. It's an act which we advocated for as Women's Action Group, together with other women's organizations, and it was enacted in 2007. And as we sit today, there are so many issues that still affect women with regards to domestic violence. And what we see is the service provision, like the police, sometimes are not responsive to the women's issues. Sometimes they also counsel the women to withdraw issues when they report such issues. So, yes, we have moved some steps. Someone was doing an analysis and they say maybe we are moving 10 steps forward and maybe 3 or 4 steps backwards. So we are not there yet.
Mm. So from what you're saying, you the legislation is in place. I mean, starting from that place where women are rounded up, because and I remember those instances where women were rounded up in the evenings because, you know, there were sexual workers, as it were, and it was seen as a crime, to where we are right now, where you still have the police not fully on board, or let me say the authorities not fully on board in terms of implementing the laws that you've so worked so hard to ensure that they are in our statutes. So what needs to be done, for instance, if we could zero in on the police? They are persuading women to withdraw the charges of domestic violence and so forth. What needs to be done? What should you be doing?
What we need to do is really to continue communicating with the women so they are confident enough to also not withdraw cases. We should also build their confidence in such a way that they really do not depend on women for their, on men for their livelihoods, because that is the major reason why women withdraw any case which they
have
report.
Have you gone in a campaign to educate the police that the women have these rights and it's your responsibility to protect the women when they come to you with these cases? Has that been done?
Oh, yes, we have done that. I think we've done quite a lot. This is why we now have victim-friendly units within the police.
Right.
It's a result of the work we've been doing. But let's not forget that we also have our cultural norms which sit deep within us, and those are not easy to change, because you might also find even female policemen, police women, can also persuade women to withdraw their cases. Mm. So it's not a simple problem that can be resolved or solved by a policy, by a law. Mm. There's a lot to consider.
We'll get to those cultural issues. Mm. But I want us now to go to, you deal with a lot of issues, emergency responses. Mm. You deal with the livelihoods of women and girls, water and sanitation, internally displaced people. Those can be easy issues to deal with in the current environment that we are in at the moment, economic and politically. Talk to me about the challenges that you experience in those specific areas: humanitarian aid, emergency response, livelihoods, water and sanitation, and the situation of internally displaced people.
For me, the major problem is this funding support to implement our programs. Mm. I'll take, for example, when we responded to the Chimanimani Cyclone Idai disaster, we didn't have enough to really help the women. Mm. I'm sure you also read or heard in the news that there were so many teenage pregnancies, and there was need to talk to those pregnant adolescents. Mm. There was also a need to provide them with baby clothes, or, and to also offer them psychosocial support so that they don't give up on their lives. So you find the issue of resources to respond is a big one. But we also had to ask other women from other organizations to come and donate whatever they had. So what I'm also seeing is resources can be found from within the communities.
But resources can be found. I suppose the point I'm driving at, Edna, is that the desperation is so deep.
Yeah, it's so deep. It is.
So you wanting funding to respond to a crisis in a crisis situation. Talk to me about that space.
That space is a difficult one. It's difficult even for the service providers. We also need to support them so that they keep on going because there's that tendency to sort of give up, to say, you know, we can't continue doing this work. So it takes great leadership to really respond to such issues. I'll give an example of when there was that political disability in Zimbabwe where people fled their homes
because their homes were displaced, preventing this violence.
We got to our office and we found about 50 women outside our gate and they wanted help. And you are saying politically, what do I do? But our guiding principle is mainly women. These are women. They need help.
Yeah.
So we just opened the gate, put the women into the office, and then started strategizing on how we can help the women. And I want to say it was good that we also got support from donors to help the women. But you are so right. The stress that comes with this work at times, it's insurmountable.
Particularly, Edna, because in crisis situations, the vulnerable amongst us tend to suffer the most.
Yes.
So you speak about climate change. It's going to be the women and the girls and the young people that are affected. You speak about economic crisis and poverty. The people on the receiving end are going to be the young, the women, and the unemployed, the young boys. So that's the space that I'm... how have you been able to deal with this kind of crisis?
For me, I think all has been like a school of hard knocks. We learn as we go.
Right.
As I referred to the case where women just came to women's action group because they know that's where they could get assistance. So for me, it takes passion to work in this area. It takes commitment. It takes a lot of a confidence in what you are doing. It's something that is purpose-driven. Because when you talk of women's rights, I remember when people went to Beijing, women went to Beijing, everyone kept on saying, Beijing, Beijing, you get into a meeting, you raise a women's issue, you are ridiculed. But you need to stand your ground, know whom you are standing in for. You should just be convinced that women's rights are human rights. Wow. So, yes, spaces can be difficult. Spaces can be challenging. But for me, it's the passion. It's the purpose. Why are you doing the work? For Women's Action Group, our value system, we really have nurtured that value system among members of staff so that they know that they are doing this for a purpose. And when you look at the staff who work at Women's Action Group, they are not really driven by remuneration. They are passionate about women's issues.
There's a purpose.
Yes.
So you've scored a number of victories that we need to celebrate you for. You've had some legislation enacted because of your lobbying. Talk to me about those. That give you tremendous satisfaction. The laws that are now in our statutes because of the work that you have done as the Women's Action Group.
I want to start off with the Constitution of 2013. I think it's a renowned constitution worldwide for its gender sensitivity. It really spells out gender equality, and it took a lot of mobilization and educating communities on what should be reflected in the constitution. And I want to say it wasn't Women's Action Group alone that led that constitution-making process. There were other women's organizations under the umbrella of the Women's Coalition of Zimbabwe, which we are a strong member of. And as Women's Action Group, I remember we were leading the health cluster, and we really pushed for health rights to be put in the constitution. And you will see in the constitution, even reproductive health rights are spelled out in the constitution. So that's one.
That's one.
Yes.
Any particular acts that you're proud of?
Yeah, we are looking at the Sexual Offences Act, which is now part of the Criminal Codification and Reform Act.
Right.
It started off as the Sexual Offences Act. And we did a lot of advocacy for that act. And our driving point was the issue of HIV and AIDS. Because in the 90s, we saw a surge in HIV infections and AIDS deaths. And I remember us pushing for the section on willful transmission, which was later revoked. But we really pushed that because we thought if we had that section in the law, women would not be infected willfully. Because what we were learning is was that men would get infected, get tested, and know that they are positive, but still insist on having sex without protection. So we really pushed for that act, the Sexual Offences Act, which looked at several areas, but our focus was how to prevent HIV infection.
Any other act that you're proud of?
The inheritance law. Inheritance law. We really pushed for that, and it was enacted, I think, in 2000 and around 2009, thereabout. And I think Women's Action Group in the 90s, we used to have these annual conferences where we popularized the film Neria, where Neria was disinherited and so forth. So this also gave the momentum in our community mobilization work around issues of inheritance, which resulted in the law of inheritance that came.
Have there not been any other problems that have come out of that? In the fact that, small houses, issues. Talk to me about that. That is sort of reverse those gains. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, the civil partnerships that have now been recognized is an issue. But for me, when I look at how Zimbabweans live and the law cannot really cover every area of inheritance because there are so many issues when we come to inheritance. Who inherits? We say the wife will inherit whatever they have. And what then happens to other children who come? So there are so many issues that are around the issue of inheritance. But we are just happy that we now have a framework in which to operate. But for behavioral issues, the law cannot really cover everything, like the issue of willful transmission of HIV, which I referred to earlier on.
Right.
It's difficult for someone to then prove that this person willfully infected me with HIV. So there are so many issues when we are looking at issues which concern behaviors, human behaviors, because we cannot even inspect when we talk about a condom use. We cannot evaluate whether a condom is being used. Someone can say, yes, I've used a condom, but you only can say someone has used a condom when you have witnessed.
Complicated, isn't it? Well, complicated. We're going to take a break there. Really, when we come back, let us go to the issue of teenage pregnancies and child marriages. Look at what the situation is regarding the statistics. So at home, please don't go away. When we come back, we're going to look at the issues of teenage pregnancies in our society and child marriages. See you on the other side.
Sometimes when I look at us promoting condom use and so forth, I'm thinking maybe that's what's driving men just to have sex with everyone.
Africa leadership faces unprecedented challenges. Every decision is scrutinized. Every action is amplified. Every crisis can define your legacy. Zimbabwe is a nation in crisis. Our continent faces complex realities. But denial is more dangerous than crisis itself. At Trevor & Associates, we believe strategic communication is the foundation of effective leadership. Communication, when done strategically, is leadership. It is action. It is behavior. It is clarity when the world is confused. It is dignity when the world is divided. Your reputation is your most valuable asset and your most vulnerable. In a digital age where one post can undo decades of credibility, we don't just manage reputation, we build resilience. Crisis is no longer a probability, it is a certainty. The question is, how prepared will you be when it arrives? Ethical lobbying is essential to democracy and progress. We help you advocate effectively, not with bluster, but with research, relationships, and respect. If you are not shaping the conversation, you are being shaped by it. In an era demanding accountability, responsible business practices aren't optional. They are essential. We help organizations align profit with purpose, ensuring sustainability and stakeholder trust. Doing good is not just morally right. It is good for the bottom line and long-term success. For over 36 years, Trevor has built relationships across the globe, helping leaders navigate complexity with integrity. We listen before we speak. We understand before we advise. We serve with sincerity, sound judgment, and commitment to ethical leadership. Trevor and Associates. We help you build narratives that uplift, protect what you've built, amplify your values in a world hungry for substance and sincerity. Trevor and Associates, your strategic partner, your narrative architect, your advocate in the corridors of power. Trevor and Associates, building resilient leaders for a changing Africa.
Welcome back to our conversation with Edna Dambudzo-Masiwa, the Executive Director of the Women's Action Group. Before we took the break, I did say I want us to zero in on teenage pregnancy and child marriages. Here's the statistics that I have. I don't know if you do share the gloomy picture that they portray. 33% of girls in Zimbabwe are married before the age of 18. 5% girls in Zimbabwe are married before the age of 15. And yet when it comes to boys, only 2% of boys are married before the age of 18. How bad is the situation? Do these statistics accurately portray the situation as regarding teenage pregnancies and child marriages?
Yeah, so right. Those statistics are accurate. And we also observe that when we go out in the rural areas. It also speaks to the fact that the issue I was speaking to earlier on, that the law cannot really police everything or address all the issues. Because when we look at our law, marriage should be at age 18 and above.
Right.
But we find those teenage pregnancies, we find or those early marriages happening in communities where people have advocated for that law on marriage, for the age to be pushed to 18. And it's such a disturbing issue. And it's an issue which communities themselves should be able to police and really report anyone who marries off a girl who is below 18.
How do we stop it? You are the women's action group. You have been on this thing for a long time, but the statistics are saying maybe you say you took 10 steps forward.
Oh, yeah.
You've taken 12 steps back as far as this issue is concerned. What should be done within the communities? What should be done within the society? Because I take it that mm-hmm. your push is not just legislation, mm-hmm. but how you move the community mm-hmm. with you.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it's a disturbing phenomenon, and I think it's getting worse because of the prevailing economic situation in our country.
Right.
Because you find those who are marrying off their young girls, they actually say the girl doesn't have a birth certificate, so the law cannot really, because there's no birth certificate, so you cannot prove that the age is this. So it needs the whole nation to come together and really find ways, strategies of addressing that. One strategy which we were pushing for is the access to education for the girl child. And we were doing quite well until COVID struck. That's when we started. I remember there was a year where the Minister of Women Affairs reported that in 2 months, they had about 5,000 girls who dropped
out of school
and they were pregnant. So we need to continuously sensitize communities on the importance of not marrying off young girls.
Yeah.
We need also strategies to improve the economy, because someone is getting married because of poverty, high poverty levels. We have had young girls getting into prostitution, into sex work, and they have sex for a dollar. And where are we going as a nation? We need to come together. And I know we are a women's group. We need to push that agenda as women's organizations. But I don't think it's a women's issue alone. It's a family issue. It's a societal issue. And
it's national issue.
Yeah, it's a national issue. And we should put our strategies in place that will help us.
Because it's about... what kind of a nation are we?
Yes.
Where you're going to have 15-year-olds falling pregnant and raising children and delivering at 15? What kind of society are we becoming? Mm. What are we going to be in 10 years? They are not educated. Mm. They are raising kids. And then the impact is that they're not likely to be able to feed these kids properly and look after them. What does that mean to us? So we might say we've got the laws, but the society is breaking down.
Yeah, I think the society is breaking down. I'm also looking at the health delivery system itself. Is it able to cope with that number of teenage pregnancies? And most of the time, the teenagers might require cesarean section for delivery, which is a more expensive way of delivery because of the age. And I'm looking at us and saying, What should be done? Looking at women's action group, I think you have read, we are pushing the issue of access to safe abortion. And one of our reasons is these teenage pregnancies. Why should we allow a 13-year-old to deliver when we have a health delivery system which is not up to scratch, which is not responsive
but
to
the needs? Is abortion the solution?
It's not the solution, but it's a way to address some of these symptoms because we have a deep-rooted problem in Zimbabwe. Because I'm saying it's men like you, as old as you, who are also marrying these young girls. It's not the young boys. You gave the statistics that shows that.
But abortion, Edna, abortion assumes the teenage mother does not want the child. But we have not ascertained that. Maybe the teenage mother. So I'm worried about using abortion as a solution to teenage pregnancies. That's what I'm saying. What's your pushback on that?
It could be a solution because sometimes the girl doesn't want the pregnancy.
Okay.
And we are having unsafe abortions. And these unsafe abortions are also leading to maternal deaths. And our maternal mortality ratio in Zimbabwe is quite high, 363 deaths per 100,000 live births. It's high. So we have so many challenges as a country. And I would put them as problems, not challenges, because they are really
problems.
We
problems.
Need to address those problems. And I'm saying it's us, the older men, who are impregnating these young girls for a dollar, for a dollar. And I'm saying, where is our Ubuntu? So we also need to change. Adults need to change as well.
How do we do that?
Before we start blaming the young girls.
How do we do that, Edna? How do we do that? How do you convince this old man that sleeping with a 15-year-old is not right? And what's so wrong with this society when a 15-year-old, when a 65-year-old man like me thinks that it's okay to sleep with a 15-year-old? It's a sick society.
It is. And this is where we are. And we have had religious sects who are marrying a 27th wife, and you wonder what they are looking for. But we are saying, let's go back to define our purpose is as a nation, how we can really address some of these problems which are befalling us, because we are talking of HIV coming back. We were saying we are eradicating HIV, but statistics are showing that numbers are going up. We also have these unwanted pregnancies, which shows there's unprotected sex. For me, sometimes when I look at us promoting condom use and so forth, I'm thinking maybe that's what's driving men just to have sex with everyone.
Let's just zero in again on the issue of abortion. The High Court ruled that effectively outlawing the prohibition of sex abortion, but the Constitutional Court is still to rule on that. Am I right there?
You are right.
What are the delays?
I'm not sure what is causing the delays, because this is a topic or an issue which we have discussed for a long time. And for me, why I really favored that ruling by the High Court for those who are below 18 to be given an opportunity to terminate their pregnancy if they choose to do so. It's also beneficial to the nation. Our health delivery system has been said to be in shambles. So it will also save if we do not have so many people.
Could it be because Christians like me, mm-hmm. don't approve of abortion. Nobody has a right mm-hmm. to take mm-hmm. a life. Mm-hmm. Could it be one of those reasons that are stopping this act from being, for brother, the High Court decision
the approved
by the confirmation mm-hmm. by the Constitutional Court? Could that be the case? What are you picking up?
It could be, but we as Zimbabweans, we choose to be Christian where it suits us, because it's the same Christians who are making these young girls pregnant. So
I got a strong point.
I don't believe that it's the Christianity thing. It's our attitudes. It's our behaviors. We are not really introspecting at how we behave. So I'm not so sure of the delays, what's causing the delay. But mark my word, in Zimbabwe, there are so many competing issues. We are now firefighting. We do not know really what to focus on, because yes, we agreed. We put it in law that you cannot marry a girl below 18. We also put the age of sexual consent at 18 and above. But we are still sleeping with those who are below 18. So we are firefighting. Our laws are just responsive, but we are not really looking at what we put in place as a policy or a law and see how best it can be implemented.
Let's move on to the issue of HIV/AIDS. Approximately 1.3 million adults and children are currently living with HIV. Talk to us about how bad the situation is. And I'm shocked to hear you say HIV/AIDS is actually coming back, when we thought we'd closed the door on that issue. Talk to me about how bad the situation is.
It's coming back, and unfortunately, it's coming back to the younger generation. The younger girls are getting infected, because I think they don't even think of protection. We really had done well in preventing HIV, and we also had done well in treating HIV. But I'm sure we are all aware of the USAID fund cuts. That will also affect our treatment.
But to be honest, the cuts came in at a time when the surge was already up. Am I right there?
So we can't blame
the cut, because the cut, yes, is bad. But when the cut came in, the surge in HIV/AIDS cases were up. Are these young people aware that there is HIV/AIDS? Are organizations such as yourself educating these young people that you have rights, yes, but there is this danger out there that is got, that is called HIV/AIDS? Are they aware of this?
They are aware. I'm sure they are aware. But we have just seen a change of behavior among the young people. And we also need to revisit our strategies for HIV prevention, because we have had young children or adolescents having what they call fuzu parties, where they have sex when they are drunk. And this is going on in the communities. And no one, I don't think we really have taken a step back to really see what strategies we can use. Because for our ages, there came a time where we used fear, where we saw people dying. But now, because of the treatment that is available, we are not seeing people dying from HIV infection, from AIDS. So that could also be contributing to this lack of understanding of how deep the challenge, the problem of AIDS is in Zimbabwe. So,
Are you saying that the young people have access to
antiretroviral?
Do they have access to those, even with the cuts that we're talking about?
They do. Everyone has, because we have a fully fledged program on art in Zimbabwe. So everyone, we also have a generation which was born with HIV, who are still on treatment. But the fact that no one is really dying like people were dying in the early 2000s, where we would have about more than 1,000 deaths per week in country. People were really scared about AIDS. But now it's like,
But now with USAID having been cut, do people need to see people dying for them to do something about this thing?
We need to re-strategize. Okay. I think that's my point. We need to re-strategize. When we were dealing with HIV then, we were looking at abstinence, being faithful,
condomize,
ABC. But yes, those still work. Those strategies still work, but we need to do a bit
more. It sounds to me, Edna, that we are sitting on a ticking time bomb.
We are.
This AIDS thing, amidst the crippled health crisis,
delivery system,
we're going to be in trouble. We're going to be in trouble. Anyway, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, there are a number of cultural issues which you've already touched on, which affect a lot of progress that you've made. And I wanted to go to those cultural issues and see whether we can identify them and what progress can be made in moving beyond them. So at home, don't go away. We're going to go into that space where we look at the issues in our culture that are standing in the way of progress as far as women and girls' rights are concerned. See you on the other side.
I think world over, the statistics around gender-based violence is 30%. One in every three women has experienced gender-based violence.
Africa leadership faces unprecedented challenges. Every decision is scrutinized. Every action is amplified. Every crisis can define your legacy. Zimbabwe is a nation in crisis. Our continent faces complex realities. But denial is more dangerous than crisis itself. At Trevor & Associates, we believe strategic communication is the foundation of effective leadership. Communication, when done strategically, is leadership. It is action. It is behavior. It is clarity when the world is confused. It is dignity when the world is divided. Your reputation is your most valuable asset and your most vulnerable. In a digital age where one post can undo decades of credibility, we don't just manage reputation, we build resilience. Crisis is no longer a probability, it is a certainty. The question is, how prepared will you be when it arrives? Ethical lobbying is essential to democracy and progress. We help you advocate effectively, not with bluster, but with research, relationships, and respect. If you are not shaping the conversation, you are being shaped by it. In an era demanding accountability, responsible business practices aren't optional. They are essential. We help organizations align profit with purpose, ensuring sustainability and stakeholder trust. Doing good is not just morally right. It is good for the bottom line and long-term success. For over 36 years, Trevor has built relationships across the globe, helping leaders navigate complexity with integrity. We listen before we speak. We understand before we advise. We serve with sincerity, sound judgment, and commitment to ethical leadership. Trevor & Associates. We help you build narratives that uplift, protect what you've built, amplify your values in a world hungry for substance and sincerity. Trevor & Associates, your strategic partner, your narrative architect, your advocate in the corridors of power. Trevor & Associates, building resilient leaders for a changing Africa.
Welcome back to our conversation with Edna Dambudzo Masiyiwa, the executive director of the Women's Action Group. Edna, I'm going to go to your name, Dambudzo, not now, later on, because I really want to know why they called you Dambudzo. Edna, I want us to go back to the issue of another cancer in our society, the prevalence of gender-based violence. Mm-hmm. The statistics that I have, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, say that 34% of women in Zimbabwe have experienced physical violence. And it's estimated that 11.6% have been sexually abused. Is the situation that bad?
Yes, I think world over, the statistics around gender-based violence is 30%. One in every three women has experienced gender-based violence. And what we are also seeing at the moment is the forms of violence are also changing. We are also seeing cyberbullying. We are also seeing sexual violence, which is resulting in these early marriages or early pregnancies, adolescents falling pregnant. All these are different forms of violence. For Zimbabwe, I referred to the Domestic Violence Act earlier on.
Yeah.
This was one strategy for addressing forms of violence, because the domestic violence also covered all the different forms, the physical, the psychological, the emotional, economic violence, and sexual violence. And I think violence comes about because of this wish or this feeling that men want to control women. When I look at gender-based violence, it's mainly about control, because someone will be beaten because they have not done X, Y, Z. Someone might be sexually abused. We have seen cases of incest in Zimbabwe where a father will impregnate two of their daughters. And for me, I'm saying, what's happening? Because we, in our strategies, we also have involved men. We have a program, we have an organization called Men Engage, which is also trying to engage men to understand why they violate the opposite sex.
We've also seen the bullying of women politicians in public spaces. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, that is something that really has an impact in women's participation in politics, because that bullying, it could be cyberbullying or it could be heckling in parliament, where women are really violated by men. And this is why women are not so keen to get into the political leadership spaces. There's that fear of violence. There's also the fact that maybe men are not comfortable letting their wives or women participate in politics, because they know what happens in the political spaces in Zimbabwe. There's so much violence.
A number of times you've touched on the issue of negative cultural practices that are standing in the way of women and girls fully participating in society. And you've actually engaged traditional leaders on these on these issues. Talk to me about your experience in engaging traditional leaders regarding these cultural practices.
Our engagement with cultural traditional leaders has revealed that the violence that happens against women is not cultural. That's what the leaders say. But for me, I think otherwise, because when we look at issues like polygamy, for example, when we talk about polygamy today, there is no polygamy, which a polygamous relationship, which is peaceful. There is violence. There is emotional violence because there will be favoritism that will be happening. The man might favor the other wife compared to the other wife. So there is no peaceful polygamy. But polygamy is a cultural practice that was there.
But you found, you're coming across certain instances where people are doing things under the umbrella of, it's part of our culture. That's what I'm trying to say. What is it that you're coming across in that regard?
Women leadership, in leadership, is not accepted. They will say, we do not want a female chief, for example, because it's the man who has to lead. Even at family level, someone might be ridiculed for wanting to take leadership when the men are there. Simple things like sitting on the chair. When you get in the community, you find when men arrive, when men come,
women sit on the floor,
automatically
on the ground.
Sit on the ground. Those small actions, small behaviors, that's what is shaping the culture which we are talking about. And it still favors men. It still favors men.
I'm looking at you as you're talking. Edna Dambudzomasiyo, and I'm saying to myself, you've spent 33 years in this place. And we're celebrating you. Well done for what you've done.
Thank you.
You've spent 20 years leading this organization. You've made progress. You are transitioning, retiring. This thing that you've been working on, this space that you've been working on, sounds like it's in a mess. How are you going to walk away from this when what you're seeing is a total mess? Kids are falling pregnant. There's gender-based violence. They're being impregnated. They're being married. Abortion issues. The situation is bad. Talk to me about why you would want to transition when things are so bad.
I'm transitioning from Women's Action Group because there is a policy that stipulates that once you hit 65,
you go.
So this is why I'm transitioning. But I'm not transitioning from the space.
Issues, right.
I'm not transitioning from the issues because I still feel there's a lot that needs
essentially
to
what I'm saying to you. I'm celebrating you for what you've done. I'm saying you have done so much, Edna. You've achieved so much, but the mess says there's so much that needs to be done.
I will go back to one of the books I have read by Maxwell, the 21 Irrefutable Laws on Leadership. Yeah. When you are a leader, you have to leave a legacy. You have to empower people to take after you, to carry on what you've been doing. You are indispensable. You are not indispensable. So I believe I'm leaving capable Women's Action Group in capable hands. I'm sure they will be able to drive the agenda, the mandate that work was set for, and we will continue in the space. And I believe the organization will go ahead and address the issues. So yes, learning from Maxwell's laws,
they've named you Dambudzo when you were born. Talk to me about that name. Why did they call you Dambudzo? And you're living out all these problems.
Matambudzo, come on.
talk to me about why did they call you Dambudzo?
For me, to be honest, they didn't give me a satisfying answer.
Yeah.
My parents believed a child should have two names, an English name and a Shona name. So for me, they were giving these names which speak to something.
Dambudzo.
And I remember my sisters were twins. One was Netai, the other one was Sekai.
Okay.
Then came me, Dambudzo. Then came my brother, Murasi. Then came my sister, Muchaneta. Then the last born, Munyaratsi.
Mm. So where were you born? Where were you born?
I was born in Kadoma.
Yes. Which schools did you go to?
I was in the Midlands, in Chiundura area.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Chiundura Primary School,
mm-hmm.
and I then proceeded to Tekwani. It's now Tekwani. It was Tegwani Secondary School. After Tegwani, I went to Harare Hospital. I'm a nurse midwife.
Mm.
So I'm a qualified nurse. I'm a midwife. Then after that, I joined the Women's Action Group.
Mm.
After doing a diploma in health and adult education.
At the University of Zimbabwe. You also did a master's in development.
Yes. From
there was a time, Edna, I don't know if you remember this. There was a time when nurses for us in the township wearing those white uniforms white caps. We almost used to bow before nurses. Nurses were sought after by boys because you know, you'll have arrived to your status if you started dating a nurse. Those days are gone, Edna.
Yeah, the nursing profession has just been eroded. It's no longer as prestigious as it used to be. Yes, being a nurse was something to write home about, because as nurses, we had that leadership skill in us. We had empathy for our patients. But what I'm seeing now when I go to the hospital, it's the other way around.
What are you seeing, Ed?
The nurses are rude. But I think it's because of the environment they are working in.
You're giving an excuse. You're accepting their excuse. Would you have done that?
I wouldn't. Even if I'm to go back today, I don't think I would be rude. But I was in hospital, Parere Nyatwa Hospital, yesterday. I couldn't believe that we now have patients sleeping on beds where there are no sheets. That really broke my heart. For us, then we would change sheets even 3 times a day. We had the resources. We could take temperatures. Each patient would have their thermometer. But nowadays, sometimes you don't even find the thermometer. So yes, I'm not giving them an excuse, but I'm saying things have really gone down.
Tell me, what attracted you to nursing? What attracted you to midwifery? Do you remember why you went into nursing?
I think it was about service. It was about service. I wanted to serve. I wanted to help our patients. For me, midwifery really was the best time for me, having delivered more than 300 babies at Harare Hospital, and
witnessing the birth of life,
giving that life, you know, seeing the joy on the mother's face and the teamwork that was there between doctors, nurses, and patients. It was really gratifying. I really enjoyed my time at Harare Maternity Hospital.
Well done for all that you've done. Mm-hmm. But Murugutisira Dambudziko.
Dambudzo.
Dambudzo. It shows my Shona is terrible. I mean, let's go back to that point, the beautiful point where you say you went in to serve.
Yes. I went in to serve.
So would your wanting to serve be changed by the circumstances where you want to serve? Should that not be the time that your the inside of you wanting to serve is elevated by the crisis that you face. That's my point.
The motivation to serve should be driven by the crisis. But I also observed one thing in nursing. This is why also I had to move. They don't really allow for advocacy. For me, when things started to get bad in the health delivery system, for us to then stand up for patients, some were not thinking that it's our role. But for me, I saw that as our role. When I left, I started seeing, it's when I started seeing things going down. So I came to Women's Action Group where I started advocacy. For your information, I led a demonstration at Mbuya Nehanda when a woman died in labor there. I led this demonstration with a few women from the Women's Coalition. We went there dressed in black, and we went where the ambulances come there. We were wailing. It's like, yes.
Here's the beauty of what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You demonstrated not that you wanted conditions to be changed for your own benefit, for your own salary, but saying, no, you can't treat people like that.
Mm-hmm.
That is what is lacking in our society. Mm-hmm. Agency on behalf of others.
Mm-hmm.
Being wounded by the desperation of others and taking action on that. That's what our society looks at the present moment. A friend of mine, as we conclude, Edna, just flew back to England. He was actually on this show when we were out in the UK. Lost his mother, who was in ICU for 10 days. And he says to me, Trevor, profiteering has overtaken the care of patients. Doctors are profiteering. They do not care about healing the sick. They are behaving like everybody else was corrupt, who takes money to be incentivized. That is sad, and I've witnessed that myself.
It is sad. It is sad.
Our society is in a bad situation.
So, as I was saying, we need to come together, bring like-minded people, and see how best we can address the challenges we are facing as a nation.
And go back to the values of Ubuntu, caring for each other, loving each other, empathy, compassion.
Because
those are the foundations.
I always say we are now surviving on at least. At least, I managed to get this loaf of bread. At least the husband is not beating me. At least, why are we operating?
At least I'm okay.
At least I'm not hospitalized. At least the doctor came. He came 10 hours late, but at least he came. Why are we operating?
My road doesn't have potholes.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about yours.
At least yesterday I had a sewage blockage, and from nowhere sewage on my gate. I had to at least find someone. Oh, everything.
It is sad.
Where we are now.
Celebrate you. Thank you so much for all this time that you've invested before the achievements. Nobody can take away those achievements. The enactment of the laws that are in our statutes.
Mm.
But you and I think, agree there's something wrong with our society.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And indeed, laws can change us.
Yeah.
But we need to change from inside. You've already spoken in books, so we're going to turn now, and we've got readers out there, viewers rather, who love books. You've already started talking about Maxwell's book. Before we go on to your choice, but this book, What We Owe Each Other, A New Social Contract, is a book that I recommend. It's about what we're talking about now. I owe you something, you owe me something. For this country to work, we need to get to a point where we say, I, as a 65-year-old father, 63-year-old father, there's something I owe to those 50-year-olds.
my neighborhood, the people that are begging on the streets, the health of the society. It's a book that I recommend to a lot of people.
Build the life that you want. Again, it speaks to the you know, I think, not I think, I'm absolutely convinced, Edna, that this country is going to change only when we change.
Well, yeah.
The only savior that can save us is Jesus Christ, our God. But there isn't a political savior who's going to come and save us. Unless we as individuals decide that we're going to go back to those foundations of love, compassion, mercy, and so forth. It all starts inside of here. And this book is a great tool to do that. The other book is Becoming by Michelle Obama. Read this book. When I was reading it, my wife was reading hers on her Kindle. It's a great book of the journey that this woman walked to become who she's become. And I think for me, the question is, each one of us, who are you becoming every day?
Oh, yeah.
Who are you becoming?
Oh, yeah.
What are you doing in your becoming, in affecting the people that work with you, your neighbors, and the society that you're in? Those are my books. What books are you going to share apart from me? Do you have any other books to share apart from book, Robert Maxwell's book?
Yeah, talking about becoming, I'll move on to Jeff Olson's book.
Right.
On this light age, where he talks of doing small things which compound over time. Setting goals that are far, but you can get to those goals
slowly,
a day at a time.
Yeah.
For example, you can choose to read 10 pages of a book per day, and in 10 days.
You've read a whole book?
Yeah, you've read a whole book. So it's also encouraging. It also helps us not to give up. Like now we are saying so much is not okay in country, but we can put small efforts that will change the nation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
any other book?
So, sorry?
Any other book apart from that?
This one is also linked to the Bible, the one by Allen's. As a man thinketh.
Oh, right.
As a man thinketh.
That's a powerful
book. So, yeah, it's
very,
it's what you feed yourself with that will make you become what you want to become. For your information, I'm now a qualified life coach. So I'm coaching and mentoring young women who are getting into this
space,
so that they become what they want to become.
That's the most important thing that each one of us can do.
So
to coach others and help them become better human beings.
So that they also cultivate good thoughts in their minds.
Good behavior.
Because it will shape attitude culminating in good behavior.
Well done.
So, yeah.
Well done.
That's why.
Edna, thank you so much for what you've done over the past 33 years, leading the Women's Action Group for 20 years.
Mm.
We celebrate people like you and wish you all the very best as you go on to do other things.
Thank you.
Allow me now to turn to our viewers who are all over the world to say thank you so much for your support. We're celebrating again 90,000.7 subscribers, 12.4 million views. We're growing. We're big on TikTok. We are huge on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you so much for your support. We see your comments. Keep them coming. We have built a website where our podcasts sit for your viewing and for your listening pleasure. Remember, when you watch something and you enjoy it, when you listen to something and enjoy it, please remember to share, to like, and to subscribe. Until next time, cheers to you all.